reincarnation of souls. And tonight let's focus a little bit on this idea of past lives and on root souls. So these are two things that we want to focus on. And then Meretz Hashem will discuss the other issues. So part of the talking about the past life is part of this conversation is, of course, related to this idea whether we could remember our past lives. Is there a concept of past life regression? I'm sure you've read some popular books and people have written about their past lives or about people experiencing their past lives. So are they authentic past life experiences, memory? And if they could be remembered, how come we all don't consciously remember our past lives? If there's a possibility, why only certain people do? If, let's assume that this is an authentic past life memory, let's say a child, 3 years old, is speaking another dialect, it's obviously past life memory, or also some genetic malfunction or something. But, well, it could be possible that. But if it's in fact a past life memory, why don't we all remember our past lives? So we have to begin to understand, when we talk about the root soul, what is the root soul? So, in the beginning of the Torah, the Torah speaks about this chapter 1 and chapter 2, the beginning of Genesis. And in chapter 1 of Genesis, in Perek Aleph in Genesis, there's a creation story of Adam and Eve. The creation story occurs twice, in chapter 1 and in chapter 2. The creation story in chapter 1, which is Bereishis Bara Elokim through the name Elokim. Chapter 2 says, B'yeh Masayis Hashem Elokim. And there's a new dimension, which is Hashem Elokim. But in chapter 1, it's Bereishis Bara Elokim. So there's two names. The name Hashem doesn't appear to chapter 2. And there are two types of creation, representing these two types of names. So the first form of creation, it's Zachar V'Nekeva Bara Oysam. Male and female, he created them. That means the beginning of the formation of the human being. In the sixth day of creation, it says, about the creation, it says, Zachar V'Nekeva Bara Oysam, that the male and female created them, which means that Adam, however we understand this, Adam is a being that contains both male and female. Zachar V'Nekeva Bara Oysam, in chapter 2, in the book of Genesis, Bereishis, which speaks about the creation, it gives another narrative, another story. And the other story is that Adam is created, Adam as a man, a masculine. And then Adam goes to sleep, right? And then a woman is formed from one of the sides of Adam. So the difference is, in the first story, in the first creation story, Adam and Eve are created simultaneously. And the person Adam is not seen as all male, as all female. And the second story, Adam and Eve are created as two separate stages. So, Kabbalistically, what this means, obviously the metaphor of what this means is that there is a concept, an idea of both genetically in terms of our own development, there's a part of our development where we're neither male or female in human development. I think we're probably more female in the beginning of life. That at some point of time, in the womb, the masculine elements of the Y, the chromosomes, whatever how it works, that it becomes a male. So what we're saying is that in its root there's one, and then it becomes two. Now, if you look at the Torah, this is obviously on a physical level, but there's something about the spiritual significance of this. That we're saying that when we look at Adam and Eve, we shouldn't look at them as two separate beings. We should say that everyone's rooted in this one place. That there's one source for everybody. And genetically, everyone's rooted in this one source. That's on a physical level. Not only is it seen as a physical embodiment, to say, like the Talmud says, that the reason why everyone comes from Adam and Eve is don't just say, I'm better than you. Because everyone comes from the same place. We all come from the same place. Okay, that's purely on an ethical level, but that's on a genetic level. We all come from that same root. We also see this as a spiritual truth, that all souls are rooted in the great soul of Adam. Okay, just like we say on genetic level, on the physical level, we say that everyone's rooted in one person, the same thing also spiritually, we're all rooted in the same person. Now this gets even deeper than this. Not only are we rooted in the same person, in the same soul, which we'll talk about what this means, but on a deep level, if you look at the Torah's story of creation, when it speaks about the creation of the human being, it says, Nasa Adam Bitzalmeinu Kedmoseinu, let us create man in our image. So the language that the Torah uses is Nasa Adam, which means let us create. Who is the us?
The angels.
The angels? Okay, so this is what Rashi says. Yeah, there's many different midrashic interpretations. Rashi says that Hashem is talking to the angels. That's one interpretation. But it's a very puzzling statement, Nasa Adam. The statement doesn't appear to be addressed to anybody. So if you don't say it's to anyone in particular, Nasa Adam Bitzalmeinu Kedmoseinu, let us create human being. So who is this speaking to? So there's multiple levels of understanding it. One level, the simple interpretation, which would be where Misadi God writes, it's the royal we. Hashem is talking, the narrator of the text is talking, and Hashem is saying, Nasa Adam, let us create human beings. It's like the royal we. When you want to talk about yourself, instead of saying, you say we. Certainly if you're a king, I don't know if you talk this in modern language, but sometimes in humility you'll say, instead of I think, you say we think. Who's the we? We is really you. Like the day is also somebody else, but it's just the day. So we, this is one way of speaking. The deeper interpretation, which comes from the Baal Shem Tov, is that Nasa Bitzalmeinu Kedmoseinu means Hashem is actually talking to us. And he's saying, Hashem is telling us, let me and you create yourself. That means that we're not a finished product in the beginning of life. Nasa Bitzalmeinu, let us create you. Who are you going to be? Well, it depends who you are. I'm going to give you your basic tools to create yourself. I'm going to give you your body and the situation that you're going to be born into and the genetics that you're going to carry. Maybe the environment that you're born into. But together, if you really want to make something out of your life, I can't really make that for you, Hashem is saying, God is saying, I need you to make that. So let us be co-creators in your own creation. And then there's a Kabbalistic understanding of this, which is Nasa Adam Kitzalmeinu. It's not addressed to a particular thing, which the particular would be, let's say, to angels or some other lofty creatures. But Nasa Adam Kitzalmeinu means Hashem is actually talking to everything. Everything of creation. If you look through the story of creation, so we have an evolvement from simplicity to complexity. That's essentially the narrative of the Torah. It starts off by Yihar, which is light, energy. It starts off as one. Life becomes more complex, and the complexity is developed into different formations, a body of water, a body of earth, and then life, and then vegetation, and then actual life. It's all the complexity of a simple something that starts off as one, and then it becomes more complex. The complexity reaches its crescendo, its peak with the human being. There's a lot of perplexity, which means multidimensionality in creation. There's animal life, there's vegetation, there's plants, there's water, there's all the types of things in creation. And Hashem says, Nasa Adam Bitzalmeinu, let us, Hashem is actually talking to the entire creation, and saying that I want this creature that I'm going to create at this point to be the culmination of everything. That means everything is going to participate in this human being's creation. Every plant, every animal, water, the earth, all the vegetation, the whole animal kingdom, everything is going to participate in this human being's creation. Why? Because if everything is participating in creation, then the human being is not just one aspect of the creation. But really, the human being is really a culmination and really contains aspects of all of creation. And therefore, what does that translate? It translates that when a person does something positive, because they contain everything within them, they affect everything within them. So if you do something positive, you're rising everything up. If you do something negative, you're affecting everything negatively. So you become the epicenter of creation. And everything is affected by you for the positive and for the negative, because everything is really contained within you. There's a little bit of zebra, there's a little bit of lion, and there's a little bit of vegetation, there's a little bit of water, there's a little bit of earth. Everything's contained within you, obviously in a minor form. You have a whole little farm and a zoo going on within you. And everything, you have multi-types of, you're not one-dimensional. And sometimes you're aggressive, and sometimes you're passive, and sometimes you're weak, and sometimes you're strong. You have all different types of dimensions within you. And that represents all different types of creation. And therefore, we become the caretakers of the universe. That's what Hashem tells us afterwards. Therefore, because you're created from everything, therefore, you should have, it's not really the word is mastery, but if you hear the B'diga Sayyam, which means that you should lower yourself to everything in creation because you contain everything. You can become the ultimate caretaker of this world because you're really partly part of everything. You can't take care of something, you can't identify with it. So since the reason why you can identify with everything in creation is because you have that within yourself, therefore, you become the caretakers of this created reality. So that's the idea of Nasa. So Nasa means, let's go back to the idea of Nasa. We're saying that everything on a physical level, we talk about Adam and Eve, that first narrative of creation, Zachar v'Nekeva bara Yisrael, male and female, created them, which is a singular unit, one cell, one being. This one being is both masculine and feminine. Because this being is both masculine and feminine, it means it contains all human beings. And then on a deeper level, Nasa Adam, which means you contain everything. So really, every single aspect of human consciousness is a holographic image of the entire human consciousness. Right? Because we all contain everything. If we're all rooted in this one soul, we're all rooted in this one genetic, and this one consciousness of Adam is a mixture of everything of creation, so every chip of that soul is rooted in the everything, and the everything means it includes everything. So every distinct soul is the totality of the entirety. Everything is like a holographic image of the totality. Now this is to go back a little bit to understand how this works. In the origin, the way it talks about Adam and Eve, so the story, if you look through the story of the Torah, the story is that there was Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve eat from the tree of knowledge, right? And then they're rejected from getting from paradise. So what does this mean? So we have over here in paradise, we think about Gan Eden, we have over here two realities. We have something that's called the tree of life reality, Eitz HaChayim, tree of life. And we also have the reality that's called the Eitz HaDa'as Tov V'Ra'at, the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Tree of life, good and evil means duality. Tree of life means unity. Right? When you say tree of life, means that it contains everything. That's the tree of life. And then the tree of Tov V'Ra means it's a place already of opposites. That when there's Tov, there's good. And then when there's opposite, there's the opposite. Now Adam and Eve are put into the Garden of Eden. You could eat from everything, meaning you could participate whenever you want. But you should not eat from the tree of knowledge. The eating of the tree of knowledge and their being ejected from the Garden of Eden is not two separate things. It's actually a cause and effect. Because once they identify with the tree of knowledge, which is the tree of duality, they leave the reality of the tree of life, which is paradise.
Were they allowed to eat from the tree of life?
Yes, they were. They were just weren't allowed to eat it after they eat from the tree of knowledge. If they ate from the tree of knowledge, then it would be problematic. But Mikola eats a Sada Terechon, besides from the tree of knowledge. Everything really, if you go a little deeper, everything really contains both a little bit of Eitz HaDa'as and a little bit of Eitz HaChayim. Everything contains both, Abzalik writes that everything contains both the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, which means it's the question is not what they did, the question is what they identified with. And the question is not about Adam and Eve, the question is really about ourselves. If we identify with the tree of knowledge, which means we identify with the place of duality, then we don't live in a place of unity, then we don't live in paradise. If we identify our lives with the tree of life, which is the tree of unity, then we live in the state of paradise. So Adam and Eve, let's just follow the chronological order. They're born as one, right? This is the simplicity, there's no separation. They're born as one, and in the Talmud and in the Medrash and the Zohar, it speaks about Adam and Eve faced back to back. So let's say one side is Adam, one side is Eve. We don't have to know if this is literally or not, but this is definitely the image. Or Resh Zonav, there's definitely a back and a face. So Adam and Eve are created back to back. They start off as a singularity, right? That's in the first narrative story. And slowly they working, so they're regressing to a place of separation. First they separate themselves as beings, then they look at themselves as separate, then even the tree of knowledge, and then they look at each other and they're embarrassed from each other. And shame obviously comes from a sense of being evaluated or valued by somebody else, someone that's outside of you. You're not ashamed of yourself. And if you are ashamed of your own self, I don't mean ashamed of what you do, but if you're ashamed of your own body, that's because you don't have a good relationship with yourself. That means something is not, you're not, there's some internal dichotomy between yourself and within yourself. But if you're a child, let's say a 2-year-old baby, right? A 2-year-old child is not self-conscious, and they don't walk around like, you know, like they walk around like Adam and Eve before the chet. There's no separation. As they become more old, they become more conscious of separation and therefore they have to cover up their body. So again, they're starting off as a singularity and slowly they're progressing into separation. This is Adam and Eve. Same idea is going to reflect it in our whole life. So therefore, what we're trying to get to is that the root of our souls, the collective roots of souls, is one. Correct? The collective roots of soul is Adam and Eve. This Adam and Eve is both contains masculine and feminine, because they say Adam and Chava, they're one, but they have masculine traits and feminine traits. And they're inverted images of each other. It's a masculine trait for every feminine trait, a feminine trait for every masculine trait. Okay. Then there is the eating of the tree of knowledge. What happens at the eating of the tree of knowledge? So there's a medrash, and it's quoted in the Talmud. The Gemara says that before Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge, their bodies stretched from one end of the world to the other, or from the here to the heavens. And after the chet eitz hadas, after the sin of the eating of the tree of knowledge, their bodies were diminished. Okay, so what does it mean that they stretched from one end of the earth to the other? What this means is that they contained everything. So therefore they were stretched from one end of the earth to the other. There was a very strong consciousness of unity with the everything, right? Because they were part of everything. Nasa Adam Kitzalmeinu, let us create in our image. Therefore they were the totality of everything. And in effect, they were connected with every aspect of creation. So it says Adam could see from one end of the world to the other end of the world, with the light that was created in the first day of creation. What do you mean one? Because they are one end of the world to the other end of the world. That's Adam and Eve's primordial state of life, state of existence. Which essentially also translates in our life. That's really our root of our consciousness. It's also rooted in the place of perfect unity. And therefore can see from one end of the world to the other and connect with everything. But after they identify with the tree of knowledge, what happens after they identify the tree of knowledge? So the Talmud says their bodies shrink. Again, obviously this also can be understood in terms of the metaphor. What this means is that the bodies shrink, meaning that they're no longer connected with everything. Because they identified with the place of separation, Eitz Hadas Tovara, they identified with the place of duality, separation. Right? They identified with one thing over the other thing. There's a commentary, the Mar Shemesh writes, that really what the sin or the mistake of the Garden of Eden is Hashem tells them, "Bikol Eitz Hadas, you can eat from everything, but don't eat from Eitz Hadas Tovara." And what did they do? They separated one thing from the everything. They singled out the one thing. Singling out one thing means that they identified with something over the everything. Meaning they could have eaten from everything. They could have even eaten from the tree of knowledge, so long as they didn't identify as a something. The moment they said they want to eat that, that was their problem. They should have said they want to eat everything.
But didn't God separate the two? Because he said, don't eat from this tree.
Yeah, but there's a statement that says, yeah, it's true. It says, you can eat from everything, just don't eat from that. What the Maharal Shemesh is saying, what it means is, you can do everything, because so long as you're identifying with everything, but don't identify with one thing. And their problem was, that's immediately what they did. They identified with one thing. So, I just want to try to understand this. We're not talking about necessarily something of the past. We're actually talking about our own existence, our own life. That there's a way to identify with everything, Eitz HaChayim, to come to life from a place of the tree of life, or to come to life from a place of the tree of knowledge. And this is a question that we have to struggle with every day. Either we live in the Garden of Eden, which is a tree of life, or we reject it in the Garden of Eden. That's a question that we have to answer. Every time we identify with the something over the everything, we're making that choice to identify with the tree of knowledge versus the tree of life. We enter the wheel of suffering and the wheel of ups and downs and the duality. That's a conscious choice that we make. Okay, so let's try to get back into what's going on there. So you have an image of Adam and Eve, masculine, feminine, Adam and Eve containing everything, right? The totality of everything. The totality of everything that will come from them. The totality of everything that came before them. On a physical and a spiritual level. And then there's the shrinking of Adam and Eve. So this is what is called the general soul, Adam Kadmon, primordial Adam Kadmon, versus the individual souls. That if theoretically, this wouldn't have worked anyways because there was an intention in duality, but if theoretically Adam and Eve wouldn't have eaten from the Garden of Eden, from the tree of knowledge, and they would have existed as they were, Adam and Eve as one, then that would have been the end of history. They would have Shabbos and came, they would have entered Shabbos and the tree of life, and then they would have eaten everything they wanted. That would have been the end of history. However, something changes. And that something changes relates to our personal life. Because once there's a shrinking of the body of Adam, let's try to use this as a metaphor, not to get so literal, but let's try to use this as a metaphor. If you take the body and you shrink it, right, and there were souls, there's one soul. I mean, obviously you would have to make this literal, but it's not literal. If you take this one great soul, this great soul is expressed throughout this entire form. So the soul will be the energy, the life force of this form. This form is Adam. This Adam is both Adam and Eve, male and female. This Adam stretches from one end of the earth to the other, meaning it contains everything that comes up until this point, and it contains everything of its future. Okay, this is the one reality. Now there's a diminishing of that form. Diminishing of that form means that there are souls that sort of fall off. It's not literal, but right? If this is the size of everything, obviously the everything has to be everything. But if this is the size of the everything, and this everything becomes now this size, where are all those souls that were connected to this part? Okay. You understand? Okay, that's one element we have to talk about. Then there's also the diminishing of these souls in particular, because now these souls are broken into fragments. Which means that now there'll have to be a new tikkun, a new rectification, a new rebuilding of Adam Kadmon, of primordial being. This primordial being, the way it exists, pre-brokenness, pre-Garden of Eden, I'm sorry, pre-eating from the tree of knowledge, and there's the primordial being which will exist post-eating from the tree of knowledge. Once there's a diminishing of this great soul of Adam, there are some souls that fall off the body of Adam. There are some souls that are connected with the body of Adam. And these two are the predominant souls that will come down to inhabit human form. Okay. Let's try to explain this, if it's possible, a little bit. Okay, so imagine you have the body of Adam standing here. Okay? Imagine the everything is right next to it. There's a replica of a body standing right next to me, okay? Now, in its pre-diminished state, everything is brilliant, everything is revealing exactly, everything is articulating exactly what it has to be doing. The mind of Adam, let's say the intelligence of Adam, is pure and transparent. The heart of Adam is open. The hands of Adam are completely giving. Everything is a direct manifestation of the divine. Right? And just like the divine nature is to give, to share, and to be brilliant, and to be light. So this Adam that's standing right next to me is this brilliant body of light. Which incidentally is one of the readings when it says that Hashem made for Adam and Eve kisoinas oir, which means garments of skin. So according to the reading of Rameir, it says actually kisoinas oir, not with an ayin, which means skin, but kitonas oir with an aleph, which means garments of light. That's why some of the imagery and the measures is that Adam's skin was completely covered in nail, and all his fingers were attached, which represents unity, one. Right, the separations of the fingers, situation, right? If I have to grab this bottle and my hands are like a palm, then I have a difficult problem. Well, I guess if it's a much smaller thing, it would be harder. Something that's very small that I need my fingers to pick up can be difficult. So the idea of fingers is actually create separation. Fingers are also, incidentally, I don't want to get into this, but fingers are connected with the five levels of restriction and also connect with the five senses. That and the senses is what really creates separation in this world. If I see something, by definition, if I'm seeing something, not the everything. If I hear something, right, and I focus my attention to what I'm hearing one thing, not the other thing. Same thing also with smell, same thing also with taste, same thing also with touch. The senses is really about apprehending the universe through our senses means that we're taking in information that allows us slowly to take in slowly bits of information. But if everything would be revealed to us, let's say we can see everything in the world at one time, then we would see nothing. Right? So the way we see things is we see one thing at a time. Same thing also with hearing. So therefore the senses is really what is a screen that allows us to absorb information that is broken down like the tree of knowledge. Theoretically, if we didn't have the senses, or we only had the sixth sense, so to speak, then we would always be in the tree of life reality. Everything we want. There wouldn't be that separation.
Is the tree of life reality comparable to the world pre-Shri
Radha-Kali? That's right. That is. Tree of life reality is pre-Shri Radha-Kali, before the breaking of the vessel. That's correct. One of the grandson of the Ramban, Nachmanides, writes that if you ever forget what your senses are, in case you forget your senses are, so you look at your five fingers, and your five fingers can indicate to you what your senses are. How? So he says, because every finger of yours, you don't have to do this now, because maybe in private, every finger of yours goes in a particular body part that's connected with that sense. So for example, the thumb, people suck their thumbs, so it's connected to taste. Okay. The ring finger next to it? So usually, I mean, you shouldn't be doing this, but in case people pick their nose, you usually do with that finger. The middle finger is for touch, because it's the longest finger. And the index finger is for sight. People that have glasses know that the way they clean their eyes, because the index finger has at least some mobility, and it's the most delicate finger, so people clean their eyes like this. And the pinky, for those of you that in private maybe pick your ears, goes into the sense of hearing. So in case for some reason you forget your senses, you can look at your fingers. But the point is that the fingers represent separation, and that's why the senses are also represented by separation. Okay.
The restriction on one hand and
that's same hand. That's correct. Right hand is giving and left hand is restriction.
Same goes for the toes.
I don't know. I don't know if that works the way it has.
Five.
It tells us, yeah, it has five, but it maybe does something else. These are just for the fingers. I'm not sure how we got to this, but we have the reality of the tree of life and the reality of the tree of knowledge. Okay. Oh, so Adam's body is standing right next to it. Adam's body is completely a reflection of the divine, so everything is brilliant. Then there's the diminishing, which means this brokenness in this light. The brokenness of this light now works like this. And now, instead of one person achieving tikkun, let's just be a little clear, the idea of tikkun anefesh, or attaching yourself to your purpose of your soul, is to articulate who you are fully. That's what tikkun is. It's not so much, it could also work, we'll have to talk about this in the next few weeks, it could also work in perfecting other things that were done in the past life. But generally, when we talk about perfecting your soul or working on your own tikkun, working on your own perfection means to make sure that you're living your life to the maximum. Your maximum potential, if you're intelligent and if you're artistic, whatever your talents are, to make sure that you're living those to its fullest in a positive way, and to overcome your negative tendencies, which we're all born with. We are born with a lot of positive qualities, and we're born with negative tendencies, and the purpose of our personal tikkun is to perfect our positive qualities and overcome our negative qualities. That's very simple in a nutshell. We have to know in terms of our own personal incarnation. Every incarnation, we're working on another thing. So in its first incarnation, when Adam is now this full body that contains everything, It's perfect, meaning everything is revealing itself. The mind is perfect, transparent, and the heart is open, and the hands are giving. Everything's doing its exact function. This would be the tree of life reality. Everything is in pre-broken state. But now, because of the identification with the tree of knowledge, which means the place of duality, of separation, of brokenness, therefore there's a shattering in this body. The shattering of this body of Adam Kadmon, of this perfect primordial being, gives rise to, there are 600,000 sparks that come from the body of Adam. 600 sparks contained with them, each one, there are five levels of 600,000 sparks, and each one contains 10 spherot. So you're talking about a number, let's say, 10 times 600,000, 15 times 600,000, you're talking, let's say, over a million. But this is the sparks of this original soul. So the original soul is one, and then the sparks of the soul, let's say, we'll just give a number, we'll say there's a billion sparks of the soul. What is the purpose of the spark of the soul? The purpose of the spark of the soul is that each incarnation, each subsequent incarnation, another spark will come down to a body, another spark of this great soul in the body of Adam. And its purpose will to articulate this particular spark. Now this spark, like we said before, remember, because everything is a holographic image of the entirety, so this spark of soul really contains the entire structure of the body of Adam. Let's try to make the sense a little bit. Let's say person number one. Okay, this Adam after the Chet Etz Hadas, after the eating from the tree of knowledge, gives rise to Chaim Yankel. That's the first person that's born. Now this Chaim Yankel, this is not a real person. Let's say this guy Chaim Yankel. This guy is, it's a guy, and he's a very, this, we're going to use very genetic terms. This person is a very open, giving person by nature. Meaning by nature means they're genetically, obviously there's no genetics for open. The first person that's born after Adam. But let's just say this person is born in a condition or an environment that's conducive to articulate kindness. This person is a very giving, open-hearted person. Simultaneously, because the person is a very giving person, the person lacks a sense of boundaries. So they have a positive, very positive qualities. They love to contribute, they love to give, they love to share with others. But simultaneously, because they also are a very loving person, they don't know where to set boundaries. So either they step on other people or they're overbearing with other people. They have an issue with boundaries. Okay? So the positive quality of this guy, Chaim Yankel, is that this person is born with a lot of chesed. Because this person is born with a lot of kindness, a lot of chesed, they also struggle with the opposite of creating gvura in their life, creating restrictions in their life. Where is this soul rooted? This soul is rooted in the great soul of the body of Adam. Because in the body of Adam, pre-Eitz Hadas Tov Ra'a, pre the condition of the eating of the tree of knowledge, the body of light, the body of Adam was one. But now that it was to create this brokenness, we have to perfect it. We have to create a tikkun, a rectification of the body of Adam. We have to repair the body of Adam. So the repairing of the body of Adam is that person number one gets the soul that is coming from Chesed. So let's assume this is the body of Adam. Let's assume that this soul comes from, let's say, the right part of the heart of Adam. And it's pulled out of that place. This is obviously a metaphor, but it's pulled out of that place. Following? It comes from the heart of the body of Adam. It works on its life. Everyone in its surrounding, which means its immediate surrounding, could be its spouse, its children, its parents, etc., will all have similar root souls, meaning they will all come from the general place within the great soul of Adam. Let's just imagine this person's life. Okay? So, person number one, Chaim Yankel, is born. They have a soul that is inclined towards chesed, and they have to overcome restriction. I mean, they have to work on restriction and for it. This person lives his full life. Every experience that he has in life becomes imprinted on his soul. The difference between pre-life and post-life is that pre-life, this spark that existed within the body of Adam, has no narrative. It's empty, it's devoid of a story. It's pre-story, it's no story. The only story that's connected with that story, with that part of the spark of the body of Adam, is the story of Adam and Eve. But there's no other story, there's no other story connected with it. Now that this spark becomes the consciousness of person number one. Person number one now has a story. Imagine an example of this would be or something, or a hard disk, so a hard drive. You have a hard drive. Okay, so the hard drive is the soul. Okay, the hard drive is pulled in and downloaded into person number one. Person number one has intellect, has emotions, has feelings, right? And lives their life. And every day they're writing another part of their story. Where's all this story being stored? All this story is being stored on the hard drive. Right? The hard drive will be the backdrop that's storing this information. Okay, let's regress for a second. When you have better, who are you at this present moment? At any moment, who are we at this present moment?
Culmination of our experiences.
Yeah, very good. And what? It's basically, we are at any present moment, we are the totality of our past experiences, having an experience in the present. Right? Everything that we had, that we experienced up until this point, is now experiencing a new moment. And then in a moment from now, that experience will become part of our past. And that's the rule. Every moment, it's the totality of our past having experience in the present, which becomes our past. Right? When you encounter someone, you say, who are you? Or you ask yourself, who am I? I'm the totality of my experiences.
And the way you perceive it.
That way the executive experience. That's one point, yes, that's correct. So the totality of the experience is one thing. What is the totality? How did the totality of experience occur? Through the intake of information. Information, eating, sleeping, doing, whatever you did in your life. This is, you're constantly being bombarded with information. Now there's a core to this. That would be an example of the memory on the hard drive. But then there's the actual hard drive itself. What's the hard drive itself? The hard drive is how we're hardwired. Which means that we're all hardwired, even if two children are born simultaneously at the very same moment, right? And they're both doing the exact same thing. They're both drinking their mother's milk. They're having the exact same experience. It tastes the exact same. Let's say it's twins, or they're having the same food at the same simultaneously at the same time. Still, each child will interpret the experience differently. Why is the person going to interpret the experience differently? Because they're hardwired differently. Which means that they're ready, there's a backdrop through which their experience is funneled. At the moment of birth. That's why you have two little kids. You have this with your own kids, you can see this. Then, let's say if you have kids, you can see this with your own kids, or when you were a kid, you can see that. You're having one experience. Your brother, your sister, or your child is having the exact same experience, but you interpret it one way, and the other person interprets the other way. And it can't be because it's just past experience, because it's the first time you're having an experience in life. And let's say you're in the womb, so you had the exact same experience in the womb. And you're born as twins, and immediately you have two ways. One kid's crying, one kid's happy. Okay? This is the hardwiring of the soul. Okay, this is the hardwiring of, I wouldn't say the soul, I would say this is the hardwiring of the genetics, right? Genetically, you're hardwired, everyone's hardwired a particular way. Our genes create a certain reality to ourselves. So pre-experiences, there's already a hard drive, okay? So again, so let's go a little further. At every moment in our life, we are our past experiences having an experience in the present. But our past experiences through the hard drive of our genetics. Let's go a little bit deeper and say that the genetic manifestation of this particular gene creation or this particular form is rooted in a spiritual reason. The reason why we have a particular genetic coding is because that matches our spiritual genetic coding. So let's say we're hardwired. Let's say, first, I'm hardwired genetically. Genetically, this is my parents or your grandparents, I'm prone to be more nervous than somebody else. So I have to deal with this. It's part of my genetics. I'm going to say that the deeper reason why this is true is because there's a spiritual reason for this as well. It's not just your genetics. Your genetics is a manifestation of a spiritual truth. The reason why you have a physical hard drive that's hardwired in a particular way is because it's a spiritual hard drive that's wired in a particular way. Because your task, your tikkun in life, is to work on overcoming your nervousness or to make a peace with it. So therefore, because your soul needs this tikkun, this perfection, it enters into a consciousness, into a body that has this particular genetics, and therefore is going to work itself out in this life. You follow? Okay, so what is the difference between pre-incarnation versus post-incarnation? Pre-incarnation is that this soul, let's say this nervous system, comes from a very strong element of Gevurah within the great soul of Adam. A great level of restriction within the great soul of Adam. But prior to having any narrative, no, a story connected to it, it's just Gevurah, it's pure Gevurah. The way it exists in pure Gevurah, let's give it another definition, is it exists as a cloud, a principle, a general. Right? This is a great cloud. This is one great whole. The way it becomes individuated, and it exists within every single individual human being, is that it exists as a prat, as a detail. So now the Gevurah of Gevurah, from the great soul of Adam, is now living in a particular person. Right? This distinct human being has a soul that's connected to Gevurah of Gevurah. This person's life, this person has to work on overcoming their Gevurah, overcoming, let's say, their nervous system. But on the other hand, they also have a very strong sense of discipline, and therefore they could be, let's say, be good teachers. I don't know. They have some positive that they can contribute because they also function in that place. This person now lives their full life. What does a full life mean? The person reaches a tikkun. What does a tikkun mean? A tikkun means that they live fully. They pursue the positive, and they overcame their negative fully. Okay, this is their full life. Now, this spark of soul, which comes from the great soul of Adam, Gevurah, now is perfect. Just like before Adam and Eve identified with the tree of knowledge, when they existed within the tree of life, the Gevurah was doing its function properly, right? Now the Gevurah is also doing its function properly. But now, there's a narrative that's connected to Gevurah. The hard drive now has a story. And the story is, the guy was born in 1947, and he lived, and this is his parents, this is his wife, this is his spouse, this is his children. This is a story, it's a whole full story. He lives, 47 is when we do wrong, because he's too young. 47 mean if he died, he's very young. So let's say he's born in 1927. Okay, so he's lived his full life, or 1917. Okay, 17 more, so he's over 90 now. He has a full life, and he just passed away tonight. He comes back, Chaimiyaku comes back, and they say, you're working on everything. Everything's perfect. This whole hard drive is perfect. We're going to have to talk about, let's say, it's an imperfect hard drive. Let's say this whole hard drive is perfect, meaning we could take the hard drive, and everything that was downloaded onto the hard drive is just as brilliant as the hard drive itself. So we're going to take that disk, we're going to put it back into the file, meaning it's going to go back and restore it back into the great soul of Adam. So it's going back to its original place. If we all collectively do this throughout history, and we all have our perfect files that can return back to the great soul of Adam, Adam's soul will reach again its perfection. We'll all have to do our part in order for Adam's soul to be perfect again, or to be brilliant again.
Is that the coming of the Messiah?
That's the Messiah coming, that's correct, when everything is perfect. So let's say we don't have yet reached that. We're talking about yet one individual person. This individual person that comes back, let's use this principle. So we have the klal. The klal is the general. That's the soul of Adam before there's any individual incarnations. Then there's the incarnation to person number one. Person number one is prat. Then the prat, the detail, the distinct person, now moves back into the klal. Right? Ruach tashuv Elokim Hashem Asana. The soul returns back to its root, which means we go back to the great soul of Adam. When we go back to the great soul of Adam, which is the root soul, this is why we're going to talk later, there are family souls and there are souls that are connected with us throughout life because they're all part of our root souls. They're part of coming from the same area within the general soul of Adam. But when we go back into the general soul of Adam, and our story is already perfected, then the prat, the detail, remains a prat, a detail, even within the cloud, in the principle. Let's imagine this like this. Imagine there's an ocean. Okay? The ocean is one. There's no differentiation. differentiation. There's no separation. Everything's in the body of the ocean. Okay? Now you look at the ocean, and there's individual waves that are rising up from the ocean. And you look at the wave of the ocean. If you look at just look at the top of the peak of the wave, the top of the wave, you just see one wave, another wave, and the other wave, right? They look like three separate waves. Where's all these waves coming from? All come from the bottom of the ocean. So separate consciousness will be waves. Collective consciousness, which is the great soul of Adam, is the body of ocean. So we all come from the same place. We're all living in the place of waves. This person is waving this way, this person is waving the other way. This person has more chesed, this person has more gvura. This person is white, this person is black, this person is a man, this person is a woman. Right? Everyone has their own distinct genetics and conditioning, and environment, and culture. Right? Everyone's born in a particular place. Afterlife, the person lives a full life, and the wave returns and goes back into the ocean. But the wave returning down back into the ocean, something very mysterious happens at this point, is that the wave doesn't become absolute. It doesn't become nullified, but it remains and retains being a wave even when it returns back into the ocean. So the prat, iyadadan elo ke'ena prat, that the prat, the detail, remains a detail even when it goes back into the general. That's really why there's a purpose in our creation. The purpose of our creation is not only to perfect something that was done in the past, but the purpose of our creation is to articulate something new that wasn't part of the general. Because if we can live our own lives in our distinct way of living, in our own, with our own genetics and our own story, and articulate our own distinct soul, then our distinction will also become part of the eternal. Not only would our hard drive become part of it, because that was always part of the eternal, but the narrative that's written on the hard drive becomes eternal. That's our eternity. Our eternity is not that we become absent. Enlightenment, nirvana, the peak of experience is not that we disappear. It's that we live immortal. Immortality is not that you just become something else. Immortality means that you are as you are, which means your entire memory, your consciousness, everything you know that is you, will exist for eternity. Why? Because if you live your story fully, and everything that you write on your hard drive is a complete expression of who you are, obviously you do the mitzvahs and everything else, but I'm just talking about in more in a distinct level, you're doing that in your particular way, then you're revealing your aspect of soul, that becomes part of the eternal, and therefore when it returns back to its source, it retains being an individual. So the root soul is one, the separation, the manifestation of souls are many, the many go back into the one, but still remains part of the many.
So it has its own memory as it goes back?
That's correct. That's Gan Eden. Otherwise it's no Gan Eden. So in other words, it does have a distinct memory. So before it comes down to this world, before this spark enters this world, there's no distinct memory. It's just part of the collective memory. Collective memory is a story that we come from the Garden of Eden. This is our collective memory as well. This is the deepest subconscious of the human being, that we all know that we come from a place of perfection. We all know that we come from a place where everything is already present. We all know we come from a place of the tree of life. This is the deepest consciousness that we are and that we yearn for. Every time we yearn for a connection and a relationship or money or power, whatever we're looking for in our life, it's really the desire to get back to the place of the tree of life, which is one. We're trying to get to one. So you think that, you know, you buy a sex or pure shoes, it's going to make you feel one. It doesn't. Maybe it does for about 30 seconds. But it doesn't supplement that sense of oneness. So that sense of unity is deeply ingrained within ourselves. That's part of our collective subconscious. That's because we come from the place of one. Right? The Adam, the body of Adam, which is one. Then we live as distinct human beings. Every person in their own distinct narrative, their own distinct story. And that distinct story is related to the prat, the detail. And we have to live life expressing fully the details of our particularity. What is our unique contribution? What is our way of thinking, our way of feeling, our way of doing? And we have to articulate that and make sure that we express it fully. This is the tikkun. So the tikkun is actually even larger, greater than the tikkun that exists prior to life. Because prior to life, one was one outside of many. There was no individuality. And after life, one maintains also individuality, also the place of distinction. And this is really itself is one. Hashem creates many. And the purpose of the many is to go back into the one. So why create one, two, and then back one? Why don't you just do one? If Hashem is one already, and the whole purpose of creation is that we should get back to the one, why do we need two? Why is Bereshis Bar? Why is there two? Bereshis Bar means base, right? This is the world of two. Why is it a world of duality? Everything comes to one. It should stay one. Why do we need this whole creation starting? And the answer is that there's something deeper that's being revealed through the creation story, which is that one now is not only one in the absence of two, but one also includes two. That the prat is not just, the klal is not a klal that's beyond the prat, that is beyond the detail. The prat is also included within the prat. The prat is also included within the klal. It's understood? Yeah? So let's read a little bit over here what's going on. We'll read some of the readings. I don't know. So the primordial prototypical human being, Adam, was neither all male or female. Today we're in these two aspects of male or female. Adam's soul is the collective universal soul. So every soul is rooted in the great soul of Adam. All souls are rooted in the collective cosmic soul of Adam. Chayatah writes, Shari Gedusha and Shari Gulen. According to the Talmud, originally Adam's body stretched from one end of the earth to the heavens, we spoke about, and after he ate from the tree of knowledge, Adam shrank. Meaning there's a shrinking, there's the idea of separation. That first there's one, the totality, the tree of life, and now there's a place of the tree of knowledge. Kabbalistically, the parts of Adam's soul that paralleled diminished parts of the body soul diminished and became the source of the old souls. So we said there are three sources of souls. We just talked about, or we talked about, let's just read a segment. The parts of the soul that remain connected to Adam's body are so-called the new souls. Yet there are some souls that originate from the source beyond Adam. These are the truly new souls. Most people have new souls. There are three levels of souls. There's something that's called old souls, new souls, and the Shamat Chadash is mamash, literally new souls. Okay? Old souls, it's unusual. Old souls are the souls, if Adam's soul shrank, we said these are the souls that have come from the body of Adam. There's also souls that fell off the body of Adam. These are souls that sometimes come to embody human form, and this is a has a particular tikkun that has to be reached. It's much harder. It's not an unusual case of reincarnation. The normal case of reincarnation is something that's called new souls. The new souls means souls that are still connected with the body of Adam. There's also something that is called neshamas chadashas, literally new souls, which are souls that are transcendent of the body of Adam. They come from a place that's even beyond Adam Kadmon. This is once every few hundred years such a soul comes down to this world, and this soul is just here to help everything else along its way. It's not part of this whole rhythm of reincarnation. Therefore, souls are generally grouped into families. Why are souls grouped into families? Because like we said, if genetically, okay, this we have to understand, everything that we see on a physical level is a representation of the way it exists on a spiritual level. So if we see physically people that are genetically related to each other, right? People are part of one family, we can assume that the reason why they're genetically related to each other is because the glove, the form, fits the hand. The hand will be the soul, the form will be, the glove will be the body. So because this consciousness fits this particular body, which means that this particular body has the opportunity to articulate these elements of this soul, therefore these bodies will have these souls. So generally we do find that families will generally come back together. They'll reincarnate together as group souls. Why? Because if we share the same genetics, we can assume that we also share the same soul purpose. So therefore we also find that within families, generally people like the same type of ideas. They generally function the same way. Generally. Now, for every general rule, there's always the exception of the rule. So there's always the black sheep in the family, or maybe you are the black sheep. There's always one that doesn't really fit in, right? There's one kid that no one really gets, no one can understand. Everyone's good doctors, and everyone's a good lawyer, and everyone's doing the right thing, and he's a good Jewish kid, and one kid is, I don't know, a hippie living in the village. And maybe that's a very Jewish kid. So there's some souls that don't originate from that particular part of the body of Adam. So we're saying that generally souls come from the same root. Because genetically they share a commonality, this is the reason that they genetically share a commonality, and they'll share the same environment and the same culture, the same upbringing, is because they have the same purpose that has to be articulated throughout their life. However, there are sometimes souls that come from other areas within the general soul of Adam. and they come down to inhabit within bodies within other soul groups. And the reason for that is because sometimes this family, let's say for a longer period of time, let's say, I'm just giving an example, obviously this is a very generic example, let's say there's a family of great scholars, and they're very left-brained people, and their purpose in life is to articulate their left brain and to study and to Talmud and whatever, study Torah and reveal it and overcome their judgmentalism because they're very intellectual, whatever, this is like what they're working out. And then there's a soul that comes like from, you know, the right spleen of Adam, like that has a lot of laughter in it, a comedian that ends up in the family. And the reason why this child ends up in this family is that it really has to create this balance, because these people were taking themselves too seriously over a long period of time. This child would create balance with them. And then, so this child needs a balance, the family needs a balance, and the child needs a balance. I'm not giving this example. Let's say an introvert family, there's one extrovert child, or extrovert and introvert. What it's doing is creating balance within the family, because we do have to articulate what is special to us, but we can't go in extremes. So sometimes there's some people that are part of our surroundings, part of our immediate surroundings, that will help us reach our tikkun.
What about spouses, though?
Spouses come from the same root, if it's the correct spouse. We'll come from the exact same root.
So where do failed marriages come in?
What's that?
So where do failed marriages come in? Would it be like a mismatch?
No, well, you don't necessarily have to marry your partner. I mean, we're just like, let's think about this a second, in terms of everybody. If we say that generally people are gravitate towards people that help them in their own personal tikkun, we actually know that it's also reverse on them as well. Sometimes people gravitate to people that actually are very detrimental for them. They should really stay away from these people. So, in general, we're going to say that itself, that people are attracted either to people that complement themselves, which means allows them to be more themselves, and also people that actually challenge them the opposite direction. That's all part of your tikkun. Your tikkun is to to pursue those relationships that are helpful, and to recognize the relationships that are not helpful, to overcome them. That itself is your tikkun. So it's possible that someone can fall in a trap and marry somebody that they're actually the worst possible person for them, and that's part of their tikkun, is to not then marry them, but, you know, make free choice. So generally, the roots of soulmates will be from the same soul. There's also something which has to be spoken about very quickly, is that because we're saying that, well, let's say they're all rooted within chesed of Adam, right? So let's say all these souls are rooted in chesed of Adam. But in chesed of chesed, okay, let's just use a better image of, let's say, a hand, because we can make more distinctions. Let's say they're all rooted within the right hand of Adam. So the souls are rooted in the thumb, the souls are rooted in the pinky. So let's say the souls are rooted in the thumb will be generally this family unit will come down together. They have this particular chesed of chesed element, and they're working on this. There'll be other souls that they're attracted to, but not necessarily their mamish, literally their soulmate. They can be attracted to someone that's the right pinky of Adam. So they have a similar vibe, but it's not their perfect vibe. So you can marry someone that's a similar, close to your mashar, close to your perfect opposite, or your perfect inverted masculine feminine, but someone that's not the actual person that you're supposed to be married to. Or you can marry someone that's completely unrelated to your soul purpose, and that could generally not work out. I should say generally will not. But it's possible that it will work out, because just like we say, sometimes there are certain tikkunim, certain things that have to be worked on in this life, that the only way to work them out is to live with someone that's completely the opposite of it. And it could be a very good marriage, but you can have completely different ways of thinking about life. So this is the general nucleus of the family, and sometimes there's other elements that are added to this. And the Arizal writes something very interesting, that he says that two souls share the exact same root. Let's say they literally both come from the right thumb of Adam, not male and female, but just even two men or two women. They instinctively are averse to each other. There's a certain... We usually dislike people that are very similar to us. And the more similar to us, we initially dislike them. So, and I'm not saying it's always sometimes we dislike people that are not similar to us, but sometimes we find that the people that we really dislike is people that really remind us of who we are. And Kabbalistically, this could be because you're both trying to work on the same things. Maybe the other person is doing a better job than you are, and you're doing a less better job than he is, she is. So therefore you feel this challenge, you know. In my situation, this is what I'm doing, but look at that person. That's the same type of life that I have, and they're doing better in the situation. So the Arizal says that initially this can be worked as a negative, meaning that you can see this as someone that's challenging to you and you can have, you don't want to stay away from a person. But it says if you're spiritually evolved, then you would actually you would realize that that person can actually help you as well. So even the person is very similar, the person is working on a tikkun that's better than you and maybe doing a better job than you in this life, if you were spiritually evolved, you would welcome that person into your life and realize that, yeah, maybe you both struggle with anger, you both struggle, you have similar backgrounds, similar parents, similar upbringing, and, you know, it's hard to deal with this person, but because that person has been working on it and maybe has reached a healthy way of dealing with these issues, so this is maybe somebody that's worthwhile pursuing that relationship. No, not
necessarily.
No,
not. So somebody with a lot of gura would go well with someone. That's correct.
No, it doesn't have to be the same. But it has to be someone that's helping you reach your tikkun. Not someone that's helping themselves reach your tikkun. How do you know if the person's for you? If that person is allowing you to be mostly you. Most you. And if the person is challenging enough that says, you know, these negative things, doesn't point this out and say, you know, if you grab the finger and say, this is what is wrong with you. But someone that gently allows you to overcome your negative tendencies. So someone that helps you pursue your positive, which is one strong component of a good relationship, but also part of a good relationship is someone that can actually be an Ezer Kenegdah, someone that can be an opposite to you and say, you know what, in this particular area, I think it would be helpful if you did it this way or did it that way, or by just an example. So this is the person that you can learn from to overcome the negative tendencies that you have. So this is generally the idea of root souls and where the souls are rooted from. The last thing we've very talk quickly is about this the idea of past life memory. So, if anyone, I'm sorry because we didn't really get into this, so we didn't talk about the next incarnation, let's talk about one incarnation. Maybe we'll have to talk about it next week because we didn't talk about the subsequent incarnation. We talked about the one person that has an incarnation. But if one incarnation moves into the other incarnation, how come we can't remember past lives? The answer to that question is that according to the Arizal, which if you look at the bottom page, open the bottom of the page, it's not a question why we can't remember our past lives, because as each life is a new consciousness, we're not going to have no time for this, but we'll just say that there's a reason for it. Maybe God willing we'll talk about this next week, why according to the teachings of the Arizal. See, most people, when they think about reincarnation, at least most people that are not educated well, they think about reincarnation the way it's discussed in the East, which is that there's a reincarnation, which means the soul comes out of this world, consciousness comes out of this world, works on certain things, doesn't fulfill its, doesn't unentangle itself from the wheel of birth, when we turn back into a new life, and it's the same consciousness that keeps on moving from one body into the next body to the next body, and then the question becomes, if it's the same consciousness that's moving from one body to the next, why is there no memory? So besides the fact that we have to understand what's consciousness, so it's just a word, okay, one consciousness to the next doesn't really help us, we have to understand that according to the Arizal, it doesn't work that way. According to the capitalistic understanding of reincarnation, it generally does not work that way. It's not that the same consciousness goes to body number one, then passes on, and goes into body number two, then passes on, goes into body number three. It doesn't work that way, because like we spoke a little bit before, consciousness number one, if it's already perfected, what does it do? It goes back into the body soul of Adam, right? He said it's like the hard drive that goes back into the computer. It comes back part of the collective memory. So it doesn't really come back into body number two. So the question of why we don't remember our past lives is not really such a good question. We have to understand what is the continuation of our past life to the present life. But this is one understanding. So because on a conscious level, which we'll discuss further next week, because on a conscious level we actually are different, every subsequent life is a new page, it's a new story, it's a new reality that's being written. Therefore, we can't normally, on a conscious level, remember our past lives. Okay? There's, Ramak writes, it's also to help us live in the present. If we're going to remember everything that was done to us, all the hurt that was done to us, I remember that you did this to me in the past life, or other things like that, I may not befriend you in the same way, or I may friend you in another way. So this is one thing. But the deeper reason, according to Arizal, is because there actually cannot be memory of past life, because every subsequent life is a new life. However, there is a possibility that people do have past life regressive memory. This can be either done through hypnosis, meditation, or children that are born at a young age that do remember their past lives. In many cases of kids speaking other dialects that they're not familiar with, or remembering exactly, God forbid, if they were killed, how they were killed, things like that. So there's three ways out of this. One way, the first way is to see this as a form of Ruach Kodesh, that it's a divine intuition. We're not talking about a normal consciousness. The person develops a very high sensitive spiritual sensitivity, and therefore it's possible that a person with a highly sensitive spiritual sensitivity, they enter more into the tree of life versus the tree of knowledge, into the place of unity versus the place of separation, and they can be conscious of other realms of reality. So it's not that they're consciously remembering the past lives, but because their consciousness is now no longer in one particular place, but can roam into higher universes and connected with many other realities, therefore they can remember past lives. Again, this is not a normal experience, but it's possible for a person to achieve a level of Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is dipping into something that's beyond the immediate, to have perspective that's beyond what is seen in time, space, and consciousness, and therefore that person can have a past life memory. It's also possible that through regressive therapy, or past life regressive therapy, I believe most times it's not accurate. These are not really memories, these are suggestions, and these are subliminal messages that are creating this whole image of who you are, because most people that have past life memory, most women remember themselves as Cleopatra, most men as Caesar. So I'm always wondering, is like, who was actually the slave of Cleopatra? Who was like the slave of Caesar? So if everyone was Cleopatra, I'm sure this helps them go through life, that they think they're beautiful, and it's a nice thing. I wouldn't discourage someone thinking that their past life, they're, I don't know, Cleopatra, Miriam, Sara, whatever. But I think a lot of this is fairy tales. But if, in fact, it is possible, I do believe that it is possible. This has to be through deep, deep meditation, deep therapy, which is because, which you don't yet have a clear understanding, but because there is a relationship between our past and our present, there is a continuation of consciousness, even though not on a conscious level, but there is a continuation of consciousness, therefore we could tap into something that's launched into our subconscious and our deep subconscious. Just like we can bring out things in our subconscious from youth, if we go even deeper, like you can have full memories of things that you've done when you were a child. If you go a little deeper, you can have even memories of something that was done in your precondition. The other reality, which I think is that people are actually not having an experience of memory in their past life, but they're having something that's called an ibur, an impregnation. Now, there is the soul that's already perfected, either your own soul, which means your own past life, or a person that's perfected even in this life, it's possible for a person to be impregnated with other consciousness, which is when a person is functioning in their normative conscious level, it's possible for the person to have an attachment of souls, not only their soul, but other souls that attach themselves with them. This could be negative, which we'll have to talk about, which is called a dibuk, is a negative experience where you feel completely overwhelmed. You know, you don't think, I don't have these thoughts, I don't have these feelings, where are these feelings coming from, where are these thoughts coming from? And they just appear, they're forcing you to act and behave and to think and to feel certain ways that you don't think is consistent with who you are. Let's assume that it is actually a spirit, something that's detached from your consciousness, not some deep psychological issues you have to deal with. Just like it can be in a negative, it can also be in a positive. A person can have spiritual awakened moments that is not so much to their own credit. It's not something that you worked on. It's not like a level that you've reached, but it's a stage. So you can, let's say you're working on something. You're working on some issue that you're dealing with. Let's say a narcissistic issue, some personal spiritual issue that you have to be working on. And you're not really sure, should you do it, shouldn't do it, how this issue should be approached. And then one day, you feel like, okay, I got the answer. I know exactly what has to be done. I have this rush of like extra dosage of spiritual clarity, and I know exactly what has to be done. You take it into motion, and you do the thing that you have to be done, and the next day you feel like you're back into your normal state. Like you have a peak experience, but it's not something you worked on. You just woke up with it, and it then disappears. I don't know if it ever happened to you, it didn't happen to you, but if it did happen to, it is possible that what happened is that it's not something you worked on, it's something that's called an ibur, an impregnation. That there was a soul that's already perfect. That because you are working on this issue in your life, and this issue needed to be worked out in order for you to achieve your own perfection, a soul that is already perfect in that area entered into your consciousness. You feel it's like your soul was visited by a guest. You weren't overwhelmed, meaning that you don't start thinking and feeling like that other soul, but you feel some extra measure of spiritual confidence, spiritual clarity. You make a choice, and then the soul leaves you. So if this is in fact an impregnation, you can also have traces of memory of that person's soul that was impregnated into you, and that will give you an indication of who you are. That's like, it's not you really, it's someone of another consciousness.
Does this happen in the dream state?
It could be not a dream state. It could also happen in the conscious state. You're not going to know that you're in that state till it's over. It's not like, you see, when you're in God forbid, in the state of the people, all of a sudden you don't, if it's in fact real, again, most of the time it's not. If in fact you feel that the soul is attaching to yourself to you, and you completely feel overwhelmed, then it's something that you can't control. Here it's something you're very much in control. You just feel like you're given an extra boost, an extra measure of something that you didn't work on. Let's say you wake up in the morning and all of a sudden it appears clear beyond the clarity that you worked on. That could be that you're experiencing some form of Ibur Machaya, the impregnation of life.
Can that just be Hashem, or is that I mean, there's always Hashem, I know, but I mean...
It could be, of course, yeah.
Is that more purified Hashem consciousness?
It could be, it could be. And it could be also that it's a soul. Of course, everything is Hashem. Hashem is sending you this particular soul. It's really because this particular soul worked on the same thing that you're trying to deal with, that has already, that he or she has already worked out, and therefore by them entering into you, you will able to work out the issue that you're dealing with much more easily.
Is there a way to facilitate that?
That's a very good question. That's a very, very good question. It appears from the Tanya that you could, that if you do. It also appears from the writings of Ari that if it's under the grave site of a tzaddik, let's say, for example, let's say you go to a grave site of a tzaddik, and this particular tzaddik, you know, this tzaddik was very was considered a righteous person because they let's just think, this person was had a very strong sense of equilibrium. They're always at peace, never got angry at other people. Is it working?